Last Wednesday evening, we were in chapter 11. If you still have your road map, we're at question number 10. And to kind of get us back on track, I would like to read in chapter 11, verses 19 through 20. There was not a city which made peace with the sons of Israel, except the Hivites living in Gibeon. They took them all in battle. For it was of Jehovah to harden their hearts to meet Israel in battle in order that he might utterly destroy them, that they might receive no mercy, but that he might destroy them just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. So we see that Jehovah intervened by hardening the hearts of the inhabitants of the Canaan land so that he might accomplish his purpose in the nation of Israel, his chosen people. So in question 10, I ask, who didn't get cut off by Joshua? Verse 21. Then Joshua came at that time and cut off the Anakim from the hill country, from Hebron, from Debir, from Anab, and from all the hill country of Judah, and from all the hill country of Israel. Joshua utterly destroyed them with their cities. There were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel, only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod, some remained. So I'm going to go ahead and finish the chapter there. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that Jehovah had spoken to Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel according to their divisions by their tribes. Thus the land had rest from war. So who didn't get cut off by Joshua in the reading there in verse 21 and 22? Y'all speak up. I think my selective hearing is not working real well tonight. It said that there were some Anakim remained in Ashdod, in Gaza, and Gath. It also says there were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel. Joshua utterly destroyed their cities. So there was an exception, though, wasn't there? Because in some parts, Ashdod and Gaza and Gath, are those areas in Canaan land? I never thought to look on the map. Bill?
That's a Philistine area on the Mediterranean coast below Tyre and Sidon. And I don't believe the Israelites ever really did conquer all of the Philistine area.
Okay, that's a good point. So we talked a little bit about the Anakim or not? I think probably a lot of us have heard about them before. They are descendants of Anak, and we first come across them in Deuteronomy, maybe Numbers, I don't remember for sure. Actually, Numbers 13. It's a good thing I have this written down. The Anak are included with the Nephilim, the Rephaim, and the Emim. And they're characteristically known as being great, numerous, and tall. So they are a race of giants. What's the most famous one that we read of in the Old Testament? Goliath. Goliath of Gath. Yeah. So the Nephilim are mentioned in Numbers chapter 13 and verse 33. And the Rephaim are mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 9 through 12. And the Emim, I believe, are mentioned there too. We don't really know a lot about them. I tried to find out some about the Nephilim, and I got a lot of running around kind of information when I went to the internet. And some of it suggested that this giant race was because the angels from heaven had sex with humans. And that's where they came from. And that is a Jehovah's Witness doctrine, according to what I found on the internet.
Oh, that's in Genesis.
Excuse me?
The sons of God intermingled with the daughters of men.
That's right. I misspoke, didn't I?
That's in Genesis.
With the sons of men, yeah.
And they produced giants.
Yeah. So, I don't know anything about them, really. And I would encourage you all to look yourselves. The internet's full of all kinds of stuff. All you have to do is put in the right words, and you can find out just about anything if you can figure out how to phrase things. So we'll move on. The Anakin are going to be mentioned more later on in other chapters as we go along. So in question 11, I ask, what three things were accomplished in chapter 11? And you'll find those three things in verse 23. So what are those three things?
Joshua took the whole land, for one.
Joshua took the whole land, yeah.
Divided it up,
gave it for an inheritance. That's correct.
The land had rest.
And the land had rest. Specifically, it says the land had rest from war. Now, it's kind of curious because all those three things are mentioned here in verse 23. But we're going to run across the same phraseology, the same statements as we move on, especially in chapter 13 and 14. So it's kind of curious to me why that it's stated emphatically in one place and then it's restated later on, like this is a separate episode and now we have the same results. So it gives you a little something to think about. So chapter 12, as we move on, chapter 12 can be looked at as a survey. That's the way I'm looking at it, as a survey or a summary. Chapter 12 is composed of only three sentences. If you read that chapter and look where all the punctuation is, it's been broken down into three separate sentences. Verse 1 of chapter 12. Now, these are the kings of the land whom the sons of Israel defeated, and whose land they possessed beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise, from the valley of Arnon as far as Mount Hermon, and all the Arabah to the east. So verses 1 through 5 list the lands and the kings conquered east of Jordan. So, what do we care about east of Jordan or not? Is that part of the promised land?
Yes.
Was it originally part of the promised land?
No.
Not really. If you remember correctly, there was a request that these lands be given to certain people, and there was a reason for it. We will talk about that in just a minute. I'm going to leave you hanging there for a bit. So verses 1 through 5 comprise a whole sentence describing the land east of the Jordan. And we come to verse 6. Verse 6 is the conclusion of the activities of verses 1 through 5. And it reads like this: Moses, the servant of Jehovah, and the sons of Israel defeated them. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, or Moses, the servant of Jehovah, gave it to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh as a possession. So if you remember back when we first started the book of Joshua, and the Israelites were still on the east side of Jordan, and we found out in the last part of Deuteronomy that the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, that they had a lot of livestock, a lot of cattle and sheep. And if you remember, the land east of Jordan, in Moab there, was called grasslands, very fertile and good for livestock. And so these tribes asked Moses, or told Moses, give us this land. This is good enough for us. We want to live here. And do you remember what the other tribes of Israel said? Were they cool with that? They think that was a great idea?
No, not to begin with.
No, they didn't.
Because they wanted to make sure that everybody bought together to get everybody's inheritance.
Yeah, yeah. You all remember that now? You're going to split up the nation. Remember what happened when we were in the wilderness and God told us to go in and we were afraid and we didn't go. And we wouldn't go, and then we were told not to go, and we decided, yeah, we would go, and they met with calamity. Well, they were afraid of the same thing happening. So, like I said, verse 6 is the conclusion of the activities of verses 1 through 5, stating that these were defeated by Moses and given to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. So to kind of finish this thought up, let's read it a little bit further. Verse 7. Now these are the kings of the land whom Joshua and the sons of Israel defeated beyond the Jordan towards the west, from Baal-Gad in the valley of Lebanon, even as far as Mount Halak, which rises towards Seir. And Joshua gave it to the tribes of Israel as a possession according to their divisions, in the hill country, in the lowlands, in the Arabah, on the slopes. I read too far. I didn't want to read that far. So let me read the part that I wanted to read. Now these are the kings of the land whom Joshua and the sons of Israel defeated beyond the Jordan toward the west. That's as far as I wanted to go, because that kind of pulls that whole statement together that I just made. Verses 7 through 23 comprise the third sentence of the 12th chapter. And all these verses, 26 of them, list the kings that Joshua defeated west of the Jordan, numbering 31 in all. So that's the way I chose to address chapter 12. And if there would be any discussion on it, I would throw the floor open to it right now. It's a lot of names, and it involved 31 kings in all, according to verse 24. That was a lot of warring.
I think it goes to show that when you put your faith in God, God will tell you that he'll help you do stuff. I think this goes to show that it's totally possible. Overthrowing 31 kings, 31 armies, And that's, you know, that's pretty good.
Some of those were...
God's hand was in it.
Some of those were really huge armies, too. When we read in earlier chapters how 5, 6, 7 kings all got together and got all their valiant warriors together with them to take on the Israelites. And God was with the Israelites, defeated them all. Okay. So moving on to chapters 13 and 14. Charlie.
This is kind of out of curiosity. From the time when Joshua defeated Jericho, so he defeated the last of the 31 kings, how much time has passed?
Well, I think I have an answer to that. We're going to come across it in chapter 14. And... I believe it's 14. Let me move ahead here. There's a time span of 4.5 years given when it is speaking about Caleb, I believe. So if you just hang on and try to remember that question, we'll see if we can nail that down. Okay, as we begin chapter 13, what important facts are we told? In verse 1, Frank, would you read us verse 1, please, of chapter 13?
When Joshua was very old, the Lord spoke to him. He said, Joshua, you have grown old, but there is still much land for you to take.
Okay.
Do you want me to go on?
Just the first verse is what we want to talk about right now. So, what important facts are we told just there?
Joshua is old to begin with.
Joshua is old.
And that there's still land to be conquered.
There's very much land to be conquered. Yeah, the old King James, referring to Joshua's age, says he's stricken in years, which means he's very old. And our American Standard says advanced in years. And very much of the land needs to be possessed. Okay. So to possess something, I put a question down here, kind of for myself: possessed or conquered?
Conquered.
So is there a difference between possessing something and conquering something? Can you conquer something and not possess it?
No, you have to conquer it first.
Think about that now. World War II, Japan, United States. We conquered Japan, right? Japan's still a sovereign nation and always was. So there is a bit of a difference there. If you possess something, it comes under your control totally, doesn't it? You own it, so to speak. You can conquer something and then turn around and leave it and let it go back. So, to be laid hold of, to be taken, conquered, possessed. I'll let you stew on that for a while.
Bob,
yeah.
The verse it says there's much land to be possessed.
Yeah.
You're going to possess it, and they'll live in that place.
They will. Bill?
I cannot remember where it is, but it's in the first five books of the Bible. But God said when they went into the land, they were possessing, take possession by little and by little, so that the land wasn't overrun by wild beasts and everything didn't go foul. So their conquering and their possession, I think, went hand in hand.
Okay.
If they were conquered and they weren't still there, the land would go foul.
That's certainly possible, to conquer and possess in a continuous fashion. Chapter 2, verse 5 and 6. Is this right now? Read 2. Oh, verse 2. I'm sorry, I didn't want to go back to chapter 2. I wanted to read verse 2 of 13. This is the land that remains, all the regions of the Philistines and all of those of the Jeshurites. And then mentions a whole bunch of little pieces of land and places. And then we skip down to verse 5, to the border of the Amorite and the land of the Gibeonite and all of Lebanon toward the east from Baal Gad below Mount Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. All the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon as far as Misrephoth Maim, all the Sidonians, I will drive them out from before the sons of Israel. Only allot it to Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you. So that's the land that needs to be possessed. Although that section in between there that I didn't read because of all the complicated names. But there still is much land to be taken yet. And that's kind of a revelation to me because, you know, years past, as I've been reading the Bible and trying to read through it and take different translations and read it, I've largely skipped over sections like this where it's really, it's not repetitious, but it's difficult to try to read all those names and understand why do we have to read these names? Why are they important? What am I getting out of this? So I found during this study, I have to read through them to get an idea of what the big picture is, what's going on. So that's why we should read these names and try to see if, oh, here's a little nugget buried in the middle of that that makes perfect sense and it's important to me. And I bet I could use that. Just a little something to think about. So in verse 6, question number 2, does this mean that Jehovah is done helping them?
No.
No. How do we know that? By what's stated in verse 6. Are there specific words to tell us that?
Yeah, we'll drive them out.
I will drive them out. Jehovah says that before the sons of Israel. But there's a caveat here, isn't there? There's an only. And the only is allotted to Israel. And the last one then, as I have commanded you. We have certainly run across that phrase a lot of times in our study so far, haven't we? Who's speaking in these verses that we've just read through in chapter 13, 1 through 6? Who's doing the speaking?
The Lord said to Joshua.
Right on. Verse 1 says, Jehovah said to him. Thank you, Ron. Okay, what is Joshua told that he should do? Verses 7 and 8. Ron, would you read those for us, please?
7 and 8?
Yeah.
Now therefore, divide this land for an inheritance unto the 9 tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh, with whom the Reubenites and the Gadites have received their inheritance, which Moses gave them beyond Jordan, eastward, even as Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them.
Okay, thank you. Your Bible says divide, right?
Yes.
My New American Standard says apportion. So you all know what a portion is, right? You cut a pie, your piece is a portion. Divide up. Portion this land. Divide it up. To who? Who's it going to be divided up to? It's for an inheritance. So it's for the heir, isn't it? To who? The nine tribes plus the half tribe of Manasseh. Yeah. What about the other half tribe and the other two tribes?
They've already received theirs.
They've already received theirs, right? They're east of Jordan, aren't they? Okay. So where'd the half tribe of Manasseh come from? Where did it originate? How can you have a half tribe? Okay. Manasseh and Ephraim are the sons of Joseph. So Joseph didn't get to go. So his two boys are the half tribes.
No, that's not correct.
Because there was no men.
Manasseh had no male people to inherit the land. Only daughters. He had two daughters.
Okay.
In the lineage, the daughters went to Moses. Said, "We're not being treated fairly. We'd like to have one." And so Moses had the land split between the two women, half of it and half of it. So the two women got the half portion of Manasseh. They split their portion.
Okay, I don't doubt that you're right, but I'm going to have to study that for myself so I can get it firmly. I just said I did.
They had no male heirs.
Okay. Thank you for straightening me out on that. Okay, so the two and a half tribes are east of the Jordan, and I asked before, who requested and why? Dean?
Oh, I was first going to comment.
Yeah, would you please? Yeah.
I was going to comment on the idea that God divides it as an inheritance prior to it being conquered and controlled. That God speaks about the future with such certainty that he divides it as an inheritance. As if you had it already. And I just find that interesting, that this land had not yet been taken, but God says, divide it as an inheritance. Make it part of the inheritance. Like some of those cities were in the inheritance of Dan, and that Dan had a big portion of Philistine territory. So God is not waiting on them to conquer the land before he gives it to them as an inheritance. So I just find that fascinating.
Well, it is indeed. It's a foregone conclusion, isn't it?
Yeah.
God can speak it into existence. And when you started your comment about the inheritance, you have to be an heir to inherit something. And what does that mean? It means you have to be related. If we want to inherit eternal life, we have to be related to our God through Jesus Christ, so that we may receive that inheritance. It's a theme all through the Bible, if you just think about it a little bit. So, and then just before Dean made his statement, I asked whose request and why, in reference to why the 2.5 tribes were east of the Jordan. Well, it was because the land was good for livestock, and these particular tribes were herdsmen. Okay? Okay. Question number 4. Who escaped being put under the ban? And we'll address that question by reading verse 13. Jimmy Lathan, would you read us verse 13, please?
I was looking in the dictionary, and it said that Manasseh was the elder son of Joseph, his brother Ephraim, and then later the tribe was the 7 tribal families, and one from Manasseh's son, Machir. And so I'm off my plate.
You're forgiven. Chapter 13, verse 13, please.
Say it again. Galatians?
No, we're in Joshua.
Okay, that sounds right.
That's okay. Chapter 13 and verse 13. Okay, let me go ahead and read it then. But the sons of Israel did not dispossess the Jeshurites or the Maacathites, for Jeshur and Maacathah lived among Israel until this day. So who escaped being put under the ban? You remember what it means to be put under the ban, right?
Yeah.
Destroyed. So it plainly says there in verse 13 that the Jeshurites and the Maacathites escaped that. They lived among the Israelites. All right, moving on. Who didn't receive an inheritance and why? You probably know that whether you read it or not, huh? So verse 14. Only to the tribe of Levi he did not give an inheritance. The offerings by fire to Jehovah, the God of Israel, are their inheritance as he spoke to them. So only the tribe of Israel, or Levi, did not receive an inheritance, a portion of land. Did they receive land? They did, didn't they? We're going to find out later on that they had certain lands, but they did not receive a large tract of land as the other tribes did. And it's specifically stated because the offerings by fire to Jehovah, God of Israel, are their inheritance. So we're going to find out in chapter 14 that they are provided by Jehovah God, through the sacrifices and through their job as priests. Okay. We wanted to fluff that out a little bit, which I'm going to go ahead and do. In Deuteronomy chapter 18, this subject is broached. In the first two verses, the Levitical priests, the whole tribe of Levi, shall have no portion or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the Lord's offering by fire and his portion. and they shall have no inheritance among their countrymen. Jehovah is their inheritance, as he promised them. So they're a special group of people in a special group of people, aren't they? Jehovah God is their inheritance. He provides for them. Okay.
Well, I think it's important to remember how they got to be that special group. Remember, the firstborn of everything belonged to God. And so all of the firstborn children belonged to God. And they weren't yours. And God said, in exchange for all of your firstborn children, I will take the tribe of Levi, and you can have your children. Otherwise, firstborn child belonged to God. Firstborn sheep, firstborn goat, firstborn everything belonged to God. And so God said, I'll take the tribe of Levi in payment to, so you can use the tribe of Levi to buy back your firstborn children. And then God said, I'll take care of Levi. They're mine.
Stupid question. Levi was not Abraham's firstborn. Yes or no?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. See, I'm learning stuff all the time. Okay. So verse 15. So Moses gave an inheritance to the tribe of the sons of Reuben according to their families. Verse 24. Moses also gave an inheritance to the tribe of Gad, to the sons of Gad, according to their families. Verse 29. Moses also gave an inheritance to the half-tribe of Manasseh, and it was for the half-tribe of the sons of Manasseh, according to their families. So these ones received an inheritance as God commanded, because they are God's heirs. And it's the land that he promised them through Abraham. Okay, question number 6. Who apportioned the lands and where are they? First off, who apportioned the land?
Moses.
Moses did. Yeah, thank you. Moses did. So in verse 32, we see these are the territories which Moses apportioned for an inheritance in the plains of Moab, beyond the Jordan, at Jericho, to the east. But to the tribe of Levi, Moses did not give an inheritance. Jehovah the God of Israel is their inheritance, as he had promised them. So where is the, what's the geographic location? Just read it.
East of the Jordan.
Land of Moab, plains of Moab, east of Jordan. And it specifically says, beyond the Jordan, east of Jericho. So that kind of pins it down even closer. And again, we're reminded here in verse 33 that the Jehovah is the Levites' inheritance. So are there any remarks concerning chapter 13? That was a pretty quick run through. I just tried to get the meat of the chapter. Yeah.
Again, in 31 of that 13th chapter, it mentions Manasseh,
And Makar was the son of Manasseh, and the other one too, but he had two sons. It still says that. I know there's one where there was only the females, but I don't think it was Manasseh.
Okay, I'm going to have to study that out and try to come to a conclusion of my own, and then I'll share that with you. And you all can do the same thing, if you would. And maybe we can all figure this out together. Because it's surely written in the book, isn't it? Okay. Beginning with chapter 14. Carol? Would you read us verses 1 and 2 of chapter 14, please?
Now these are the territories which the sons of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and the son of, and Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel, apportioned to them for an inheritance, by the lots of their inheritance, as the Lord commanded through Moses, for the nine tribes and the half tribe.
Okay, so we're shifting geographically here as we go into chapter 14, aren't we? So what is said about the land discussed in chapter 14? What's the first thing it says about it? What land is it? It's Canaan land. Okay, and who's it apportioned by? There are several people involved here, aren't
there?
Yep. Eleazar the priest, and Joshua the son of Nun, and heads of the households of the tribes, as Joshua or Jehovah commanded through Moses, for whom?
The nine tribes and a half.
The nine tribes and a half. Okay. So, when I was looking at this, trying to answer that question for myself, I thought it was interesting. How many people were involved in the apportioning, the dividing? Eleazar the priest, Joshua the son of Nun, the heads of the households of the tribes. So it starts at the top, goes to the tribes. Each of the tribes are full of a lot of families, aren't they? They're not just one big family. Well, they are, but, you know, they're not. They are, and they're not. So you have individual families in the tribe. And each of these families is the patriarchal system. The male was the head of the particular family. So Joshua didn't say, okay, these acres over here are for you, these are for you, these are for you. These acres over here are for your tribe. The heads of the tribes get together and work out the details. I'd never really thought about that much before. I mean, because God could just speak it all into being if he wanted to. He could have it all surveyed out and staked out, and everyone would know where they were going. But it was a group effort. Okay. Question number eight. But what about the land in verses 3 through 5? What about the land, verses 3 through 5? Carolee, would you read for us verses 3 through 5? Of chapter 14.
Moses had granted the two and a half tribes their inheritance east of the Jordan, but had not granted the Levites an inheritance among the rest. For Joseph's descendants had become two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. The Levites received no share of the land, but only towns to live in, with pasture lands for their flocks and herds. So the Israelites divided the land just as the Lord had commanded Moses.
Okay, thank you. So what about the land in verses 3 through 5? said it's already apportioned. We're reminded that the half tribes are Ephraim and Manasseh. And again, we're reminded that the Levites receive no land, but they get cities to live in with their pastures, cities with pastures, for their livestock and for their property. Just as Jehovah commanded Moses. So even though the Levites didn't get a large section of land, as the other tribes did, they get cities and lands as their own property within the geographic areas of the other tribes. Just as Jehovah commanded Moses. Who is the subject in verses 6 through 9? And what is his attitude? Eileen, would you read verses 6 through 8 for us? Actually, I said 9, didn't I? 6 through 9.
When the children of Judah came to Joshua and Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephthah, said to him, "You know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses swore on it that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God."
Thank you. So who was that group of scriptures referring to? Who was the subject? Caleb. Okay. Caleb, son of Jephthah, the Kenizzite. See, I put an N in there. There's no N. Of Judah, of the tribe of Judah. Caleb is 40 years old. He sent out to spy the land. That's history, right? Brought back word. Specifically, it's described as it was in my heart. So he told Moses exactly what was on his heart, what he believed to be the truth. States that I followed Jehovah, my God, fully. That's something that we could all give thought to in our own lives, isn't it? How are we following our God? Caleb followed God fully. Says, you know the word. In verse 6, he's speaking to Joshua, and he says, you know the word. I'm telling you like I told it before, which Jehovah spoke to Moses. My brethren, not Caleb, but my brethren, made the heart of the people melt with fear. But Caleb's response was, if we go to Numbers in chapter 13 and verse 30, his response was, we shall surely overcome it, the land and the peoples. And in Numbers chapter 14 and verse 24, he's described as having a different spirit. He has followed me fully. So Caleb's a pretty good example of a faithful person, believer in Jehovah God. And we know all the story about the spies and how they had to, the nation of Israel had to wander for 40 years because of Caleb's brethren. So in question number 10, which we find the answer to in verse 9, what was Moses' promise to Caleb? Did he promise him anything?
Everywhere your foot treads
shall be your inheritance. And furthermore, to your children forever. Because you have followed Jehovah fully. So there was a little reward there, wasn't there? It pays to be faithful. So in question number 10 is, in chapter 14, is how is Caleb described?
He was 85 years old and his strength had not abated.
85 years old and his spirit is not abated. So, Charlie, remember that question that you asked at the beginning of the class?
Uh-huh.
So if we combine Joshua and Caleb's different statements together, we find out that it's about four and a half years that it's taken them to get this far. Because Caleb's 85 years old now, and he was 40 years old when he was sent out as a spy. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. So that's a general time frame. It's not an exact to the day. Jimmy?
The one that got land, the first woman, was the son, daughter of Caleb. It's in chapter 15. And there may be, I know there's two others somewhere, but in this, in Joshua, his daughter married, he was of the tribe of Judah, and that would be her inheritance because she was the child, and she married Caleb's brother. So basically she would have lost her inheritance because it would go to her, I guess they're in the same tribe, I don't know, but she got land anyway.
Okay. Be here next week and we'll really fluff that out. Like you said, it's in chapter 15. Okay. So, in verses 10 through 12, how was Caleb described? If we read through that, it's like Ron said, that he still has his strength. Specifically, he states that Jehovah has let me live, just as he spoke. 45 years since he spoke to Moses in the wilderness. I am 85 years old. I am still as strong as I was. As my strength was then, so my strength is now. Boy, that would be great to be that way. Man, that'd be awesome. So his strength is good for war, for going in and coming in. And he's described as being confident in Jehovah. He said, give me the hill country about which Jehovah spoke. The Anakin are there with great fortified cities. Perhaps Jehovah will be with me. Then he states emphatically, I shall drive them out as Jehovah has spoken. To finish up the chapter, how was Caleb blessed and why? And I used verses 13 through 15 for the basis of my answers. He's blessed because he followed Jehovah, God of Israel, not just a little bit, says fully. He received Hebron, the city of Arabah. Arabah was the greatest man among the Anakin. Then the land had rest from war. That statement we heard before in Joshua 11, chapter 11, verses 23. So that's repeated several times, that the land has had rest from war. Okay, the buzzer's about to go off again. We will attack chapter 15 next Wednesday, Lord willing. Appreciate you all for being here and for helping out in the class.